This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 110 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest today is the creator of the groundbreaking video series, The Magic Show. He is the marketing manager for StarCityGames.com, and he is a founding member of Team Bald is Beautiful. He is Evan Irwin. Hello.
Hi, Erin. How you doing?
I am great. How about yourself?
I'm fantastic.
Yeah. That was actually, I think that was one of the first tweets I ever sent you was, can I rub your head?
Yes, it was. That was cool.
And then I think you unfollowed me shortly after. I kind of felt like Elvira from Tiny Toons. I was like, wait, come back. I just want to rub your head. And I couldn't figure out what I did wrong.
I did come back eventually.
You did. And you're one of those people that I don't keep up with my followers too much because I feel like that's a really slippery slope if you start monitoring that too closely. I know there used to be, I think it's still around, but there are apps you can install or like widgets that will literally tell you who unfollowed you. And when I first started my show, I used to look at that religiously and I would beat myself up over it, and I stopped, so I really don't monitor that anymore. But every once in a while, I like to make sure that there's no bots following me or no spam bots or anything like that. And you're one of those people where every time I see your name there, I'm like, he's still here? Like, okay. So I'm always so grateful that you stuck around.
Well, I enjoy your content, and you know, you work hard at what you do, and I always respect that, so that's terrific.
And I respect you as well, so thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
All right. So the first thing I want to know, which I'm sure you get asked a lot, is where does the name Mr. Orange come from?
Sure. So, you know, one of the problems with kind of growing old is all of your cultural references stop making sense to people. And I mean, you know, so to kind of rewind it back a little bit, I was a huge film geek when I was a kid, and I used to go and rent like all the classic movies and watch all the stuff. And so, I kind of got obsessed with Quentin Tarantino at one point. And he also came from Knoxville, Tennessee. And I was born and raised in Morristown, Tennessee, about 45 minutes away. So that was really cool. But anyway, he made a movie called Reservoir Dogs. And the whole shtick of the movie is that it's a robbery. It's a jewelry robbery movie. It's a heist movie where you never see the heist. Mm-hmm. One of the things they did in the movie was that all of the guys who were involved in it, they don't know each other's names. They just call each other by colors. So there's Mr. Blonde, there's Mr. Blue, you know, there's Mr. White, and there was Mr. Orange. And Mr. Orange in the movie, I don't want to spoil it. It's a brilliant movie. If you haven't seen Reservoir Dogs, go see it. Mr. Orange is more interesting than he first appears. And as a result, I found that really cool and just kind of aped it from there.
So are you implying that you may come off as uninteresting, but there's more to you, sort of like an orange, if we peel back the layers?
I don't know if I thought about it that much. I think, you know, in terms of like, you know, the orange and the peel and the layers and things, mainly it was that, you know, I love the movie. I love the character. I love the writing. And I love the fact that, you know, essentially you can, you know, like I like to think that, you know, people kind of take me one way. But if they hang around long enough and watch enough of either my content or pay attention to me long enough, that I'm not just, you know, one dimension, which is nice. And that mattered a lot more before a lot more people knew me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I had a theory for where you got that name from. When I went through your articles last night, the picture that you use on Star City Games, you're looking very orange in that picture. And I was like, maybe he just likes to tan. Like, maybe that's the thing. I don't know. And
oh, no, I'm as white and pasty as they get.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a ginger. I can maybe out pasty you. Like,
you probably can. But together we will burn in the sun.
I always used to have this theory. I remember when I was a teenager, I had tried to be cool, and I used to try tanning beds because that's what all the kids were doing. And I swear, I used to come out of them whiter than when I went in.
Oh my God.
And one of my friends had come up with this theory about me, because of course we were comic book nerds and we were gamer nerds, and she was like, if you were a superhero, you would be Can't Tan Girl, and you would just unrobe or disrobe and blind the opponents. And so that's my superpower, I think. So
that's amazing. I like it.
So you said you grew up in Tennessee. What was your childhood like?
It was fine. I mean, the childhood thing is interesting. Let's see where to take this, how to start. You know what I mean? Like, where do you kind of, how do you frame a life?
Yeah.
I mean, as for, growing up and whatnot, probably the most interesting aspect of my childhood is that for the first 15 years of it, I was not called Evan.
Really?
Yeah, my first name is Jesse. Mm. And so, one of the things that I did when I went to college is, the teacher called me Jessica. and B, as soon as she did that, I was like, you know what? Now's the time I can change my name if I don't want to be called that anymore. And so I said, you know, please call me Evan. And that was just from that day on, I was Evan Irwin instead of Jesse Irwin. And so, you know, like my family, when I went back in Thanksgiving, they still call me Jesse and whatnot. But anyway, grew up with two older sisters and eventually had a younger sister from a divorced home. Parents got divorced when I was five. I don't know, man. I was kind of a depressed kid,
yeah.
Which is weird. And then it didn't get any better when, you know, I just, I don't know. There was a lot of bullying in middle school and things. And those things really kind of shaped a lot of sort of how I treat people and things because that's all, you know, it's very negative and it's a very terrible way to treat people. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt like, you know, I can kind of relate to, sort of the, you know, the stereotype, if you will, honestly, of the sort of the outcasts and the, you know, and the loners and the kids who got bullied and the kids who have their weird, you know, kind of, their weird interests or their quirky interests. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to call them bad, mm-hmm. but anyway, you know, I kind of, you know, I grew up sort of, you know, and sort of on the outside, I was not a cool kid. It was not particularly well liked, I guess, as it were, but, I read a lot of books, you know, read a lot of Stephen King, a lot of Dean Koontz, a lot of that stuff when I was a kid. Yeah. He writes some really interesting books, some of them better than others. And, as you know, and,
I do.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't all bad, but I was kind of a, you know, there were points where I was kind of, I don't know how you put it, really annoying, I guess, as it were, because I was so down on me and myself and things around me and stuff when I really shouldn't have been, you know what I mean? Super depressed, like Walt Disney World, you know, that's a really weird thing to be, just sort of as a kid. But, you know, I got, there was a point when I was about 16 where I wish I could pinpoint it to like a very simple moment, but there was a point in which I stopped being so depressive, and I stopped being so down, and something just kind of clicked. And it was really, you know, like, I graduated school early because, you know, as I mentioned, the bullying and the fact that I was kind of an outsider meant that I didn't want to stay in the place. And so as a result, I graduated early and I really wanted to, you know, kind of do something different. And I dropped out of community college, you know, after one semester, because I would just stay up all night playing Quake and, you know, fall asleep in class and all sort of garbage. And, you know, it wasn't what I really wanted to do. And I knew it. And community college, if you don't know, is just like high school with no rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like the same people. And except this time you don't have to do your homework and you don't really have to show up for class if you don't want to, if you can pass all the tests. But yeah, you know, I kind of entered the workforce and I was, you know, I love computers. You know, when I was a kid, one of the things that, you know, growing up from a divorced home, I didn't really have much of a father figure growing up. But when I was around 13, everybody, you know, all my friends were into bands. I mean, they all wanted to play guitar, they wanted to play drums, they all, you know, they wanted to rock out. And so, you know, I tried to learn the bass at the time, and I did a little bit, but you know, everyone wants to play guitar because guitar is a cool thing. And anyway, so I met this guitar teacher, his name's Jack Haynes. And that man did more for me sort of, you know, both in like teaching me things, like he taught me how to use computers. He taught me how to tear computers apart and build them. Obviously he taught me how to play guitar. And he was a real father figure, you know, in my teen years when I needed it. And it was through sort of knowing him and being able to do things that he taught me and sort of feel better about myself by playing guitar and things that, you know, I kind of was able to turn the corner. And it was nice that, when I was in my early 20s, I went and found Jack. I went and found him again. And I got to tell him, you know, I got to say, hey, you know, like, when I was, you know, when I was a teenager, like, all that stuff was really important to me. And I really appreciate you taking the time, you know, like, because he never had to. You know, I used to go over his place and we used to, you know, like, check out games, and he would show me this new stuff, and he would show me how to make web pages, and, you know, all that stuff that was sort of the foundation that let me learn all of the skills that eventually became me working in IT, which I did for a decade, and then eventually became me working in video, which is why you see the Magic Show today. So a lot of that stuff just became, you know, depressed kid, kind of got over it, sort of turned a corner, didn't want to be called by my first name anymore, you know, was able to kind of say, you know, I'm this person now, I'm not the old person anymore. And it was, you know, it was nice. There's not a super big bow on that, I guess, but, you know, it was great to finally, you know, kind of get on your own. I got a real job, you know, and was able to start making, you know, different friends and kind of move on from the terribleness that was high school, because I hated every second of it.
Did gaming help you survive the bullying? Like, did you ever use gaming as an escape back then? I know I did.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, like, I was an NES kid, like, and, you know, on my fifth birthday in 1995, I got a brand new NES. I mean, I got the one with the robot, man. That was hot. That was the stuff. And that robot never worked ever. Not one time.
I remember.
And I tried. You have no idea. 4 days. Me and Gyromite and that stupid robot, and you try to put it in his little hands, and he would never push. I mean, you know, yeah. It was bad. It was crazy. I just wanted the robot to work. But yeah, you know, like with NES, with SNES, I had a PlayStation. I mean, like, there are wonderful memories of playing Ridge Racer until God knows what time in the morning. You know, you could take out the CD for Ridge Racer. You could put in your own music. You know, that was really cool. But yeah, gaming was great. It was a great escape. I mean, you know, Magic was another one, obviously. I mean, you know, if we want to bring it back down around to the game, being good at Magic. And I know in the great scheme of the world, I'm not that good at Magic. But back in 1996, it was a big deal that I could beat other people at a game that had a social aspect, so I could make friends, and that was cool. But I could also be good at something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for, you know, sort of like a chubby kid who had to be, you know, as funny as he could to try to stand out and stop people from, you know, bothering him or pestering him or whatever. It was nice to be, like, actually good at something. Mm-hmm. And I was actually good at Magic. I was winning tournaments, and that was a lot of self-esteem boost that, you know, I kind of needed at the time. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had several pros on my show who grew up sort of like we did, where they were either the chubby kid, or they were the awkward kid, or they were the nerdy kid. And I always ask them, you know, now that they're popular, or that they're known, or they're cool, you know, if they ever completely shake that. And you know, now that you are one of the cool kids, you know, you are a visible personality and people enjoy your work, you know, do you feel like you've made it, or are there times where you still feel like that kid on the playground? Do you ever lose that?
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of hangs out. You know, I mean, like, those scars, they're so deep. I mean, you know, it's tough to say that you'll never feel that way again, or that you'll never sort of, I don't think I'll ever fully shake that kind of, you know, there's the insecurity, and there's the, you know, there's the fear of failure, and there's the feeling that, you know, what you do is bad, or what you do is terrible, or what, you know, you get really down on yourself. And, you know, that's the stuff you kind of struggle with. You know, it's not. I like, you know, I'm an enthusiast, as the great Ruben Pressler once penned, but, you know, I like to, you know, it's tough because, you know, for as many ups, there are also downs, and, you know, like, it's always kind of hanging out there, but you find ways to kind of work around it, and you kind of just get better. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't bother you as much anymore, particularly as you get older. You stop worrying so much about it, but, you know, it took a long time.
Mm-hmm. And how did you first discover Magic the Gathering?
The first Magic the Gathering. Okay. So this kind of goes back to school, where when I was 16, or I'm sorry, when I was 14, actually, I discovered a loophole in high school. And the loophole was, if I took two classes in summer school, I could skip my entire junior year.
What?
Oh, yeah. But there was a change from where, instead of taking 7 classes a day, you would take 4 classes a day. So being in the class for 50 minutes, you would be in class for an hour and a half. And they called that block scheduling. Mm. And we just so happened to be the magical class that needed less credits to graduate, because one class kind of got a leg up if they wanted to use it. And I kind of read the details of block scheduling and what it meant for credits, how many credits you need to graduate. And I went to the counselor and I was like, this is right, right? I can do this, you know? And the counselor just kept trying to talk me out of it. My friends kept trying to talk me out of it, you know? And they're like, man, high school's great. High school's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, not for me. I want to get out of here as soon as possible. So I went to summer school, and there at summer school, you know, there was one bright, sunny day in the summer. Two people were battling, I'm guessing, you know, Ice Age brews or something. And I walked over and I kind of watched them for a minute. And, you know, I saw the card Blinking Spirit. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget seeing Blinking Spirit there. And, you know, he was explaining to me that 0:, he can return it to his hand, meant that no matter what his opponent did or how he blocked or whatever it was, he wouldn't die. And I was like, wait. This game has a creature that you can just play over and it's never going to die. You can always do that. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, you know, there was like, it's a little thing, but it was just like mind blowing to me at the time. And, you know, I immediately got completely obsessed and we were playing all the time. And I made great friends from summer school there, who would play Magic with me for years thereafter. And, you know, and it was great. And so it became not only a game that I could love because it was super complex and super deep, you know, it really gave me, the social aspect that I was kind of yearning for. So, from there, you know, just bought cards, bought decks. I mean, you know, I remember cracking packs of Ice Age and Homelands and Fallen Empires and, I mean, on through Alliances. I remember when Balduvian Horde was the greatest thing ever and Force of Will was bad because it was card disadvantage. And that was a big deal. You know, you can only run like 3 Force of Wills in your deck because you don't want to run 4. I mean, it was silly. I mean, but that was, and then, you know, I started going to tournaments and stuff and that was super cool. And I would start going, you know, like an hour away from the house and every weekend I would go play and whatnot. And yeah, it was a heck of a time.
What made you decide to start playing competitively as opposed to just the kitchen table?
Cause I'm really competitive.
Yeah.
I'm really competitive. I mean, for God's sake, like we had, you know, I'm competitive on SingStar. I'm competitive on, you know, just dance. I mean, like I'm competitive in all the things. It's, you know, and I mean, even in business, you know what I mean? Like even in, you know, the stuff that SCG does or whatever, you know, I don't like, I want to be the best. I want, like when I make videos, I want to make the best video. I don't want to make less than the absolute best I can produce and which is ideally better than everyone else. I'm super competitive. So when Magic, you know, Magic is by default anyway, it's a 2-player game. There's going to be a winner. There's going to be a loser. There can be, you know, tournaments in which, you know, the best player is going to be winning and you're able to win these prizes. And I just love every aspect of that.
Mm-hmm. And you had some pretty noteworthy, you know, appearances back then. You top aided a bunch of PTQs. You played in an Invitational, Pro Tour Valencia. You played in Nationals. You know, do you ever miss that lifestyle or that grind?
The real thing is that, you know, ultimately I've had kids for basically my adult life, you know, like obviously not planned, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, at one point in time, I wanted to be a screenwriter and, I was actually like formulating plans to move to Hollywood and essentially scrim and scrape until I could make it, you know, in the big city or whatever, and be a screenwriter. I'd written many scripts. I'd had a writing partner that I'd worked with and whatnot. And then boop, girlfriend got pregnant and there we are. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, can't go living on a shoestring and having no idea what's going on when a kid's coming. Mm-hmm. So that kind of buckled down, you know, the things that I need to be aware of and things that I'm responsible for and sort of try to keep that steady. So what I'm getting at essentially is that there were the years in which I built the Magic show kind of from the ground up, those sort of first, you know, 2006 until like 2009-ish, was, you know, I feel when I'm like, when I look back, you know, I'm generally kind of, I'm not super happy with the amount of time that I had to invest in the show that I wasn't able to invest in the kids, you know? And, you know, so I had my 2 girls, with my first marriage. And then when I had my second marriage, there were, you know, I've had 2 more kids, Maddie and Miles, and they're amazing. And the other half was that, you know, I know how much I missed with my first 2 daughters and I wanted to kind of go off the road a little bit. So I wouldn't be traveling so much, you know, and being away from the family so much, you know, for my new kids. So there was that sort of feeling of family and responsibility, you know, when you're, when you're younger, when particularly like you're in your 20s, and you know, like you're almost selfish to a fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, everything is you, and you want to build everything, and you have the time to put in whatever you want. And so, you know, being a parent that young, I know that ultimately, I think my kids suffered for it a little bit, and you know, and there's some guilt there. But ultimately, I want to, you know, I'm really proud of my kids, obviously, and they're great kids, and they're smart as all get out. And you know, at this point, you know, I'm able to try to spend as much time with them as possible, and that's also why you see, you know, a few less magic shows, you know, than you did in the past, and that sort of thing. It's like, you know, I could stay at work, you know, I could stay at Star City, and I could work, you know, all night long, to produce another piece of content, or I could go home and have dinner and play with the kids and see what they're doing today, you know, and play a game with them or whatever, and then they get to, you know, and they get to see their dad for a little while. So you know, I've been making more of that choice than I did before. And so that's kind of where that came.
Okay. So we'll certainly expand on your family a little bit later. So do you get to play as much? Do you get to play at all these days? Like, it sounds like you're pretty busy.
It is, you know, oh, I have so many friends at Wizards. Cause this is the part where we talk about Magic Online. This is the part where it makes me feel bad. I cannot play Magic Online right now. Mm-hmm. I part of me refuses to, and the other half knows that there are so many issues that I might run into, and I don't want to like freak rage, you know, like, and start just like some crazy rant on Twitter. I mean, good Lord, the Hall of Famer guys who put up with the most crazy things that they have put up with. I mean, you know, it's amazing that they are as civil and as calm as they are about it. So, you know, for me, you know, I want to play Magic Online. I want it to be better at some point. I hope at some point it'll be a fine program that we can all love and enjoy. But for now, I've been generally playing a little bit. I mainly play at pre-releases. Here recently, I've been able to go to Grand Prix Orlando.
I saw that. You were at Nashville, weren't you?
I was. I was in Nashville, too, and that was super fun. And like for Nashville, it was amazing. I got to hang out with my buddies James and Joe. And those were my two friends when we used to travel around with the unified constructed PTQ season, and that was during Ravnica Kamigawa standard. Mm. If you remember that.
Yeah.
And so there were, you know, there were team constructed tournaments back then, and that was for the Pro Tour that the Sliver Kids won, you know, JVL. It's been nice actually here recently to be able, you know, like play in a draft and, you know, play a sealed deck and, you know, just kind of get some of that competitive sort of spirit back and be able to take the time to play the game some more, because I don't get to play as much as I used to. And, you know, and of course you miss that sort of stuff. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to deny the Magic Online drafting, and then I'll read something terrible on social media and I'll stop. I mean, you know, I want it to be better. Everyone wants it to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I mean, at some point they'll get there. I don't know when that point is, but I'm sure it'll be here someday. And when that comes, I'll return to Magic Online. In the meantime, you know, I'll battle, you know, sort of casual and whatnot. And usually just through pre-releases, which are super fun. Mm-hmm.
Now, I found your first article for Star City Games, which you wrote back in 2004. And I couldn't help but notice that you didn't really introduce yourself or anything. Like, typically when I go back in time and I dig up, you know, information on people, I can always find like that welcome post. Like, hi, I'm so-and-so, or, you know, you may know me from here. And you just wrote as if we'd known you for years. How did you get hooked up with Star City Games?
Sure. Let's see here. I took a break from Magic for many years. I took a break from, let's see, from Stronghold until Darksteel. That was sort of my blackout period there.
That was many people's blackout period.
Yeah, you know, there was a combo winner in the middle of that and all other stuff. But, you know, the other half was that, like, literally the impetus for me to stop playing Magic was that I could no longer attend tournaments. Mm. Because I'm very competitive. I want to be competitive. I want to do something competitive. And I at that point, I was working for a bank, and I couldn't get to the Wednesday night tournaments in time. And on Saturday, I had to come in and do something for like 5 minutes or whatever in the bank, but it meant that I couldn't go to Knoxville and play in the tournament there. So I had to stop. Anyway, in the interim, I got involved with a company called Niantara Studios. They made a game called Star Chamber. And Star Chamber is very similar to Magic. There's five different types of, you know, mana, if you will. And there were nine different civilizations, and they were all what we would describe as the guilds.
Okay.
You know what I mean, there were color pairs essentially in the game. Anyway, the point is that Star Chamber was like Magic that had a board game element. It was sort of like a 4X game that had like a collectible card game element. And it was brilliant. It was a brilliant design. And I, you know, when I found it, it was just a little independent game. I got to know the creator. His name is Paul Denon, and a super cool guy. And, you know, I loved the game, and I began to be the community manager for the game, for Star Chamber. And so that's when I started to make content. You know, I started to help him run tournaments inside the game. And I used to write articles every week about, you know, a deck or a tournament that happened or a new set that was coming out or whatever it was, because it was, you know, again, like a collectible card game model. There were digital packs that you could buy, and there was trading. And at one point, I actually opened a card store for the game. It was, you know, like a little storefront that just sold, you know, digital objects essentially for a very short period of time. And I sold it for whatever I had in it just to get out of it. Mm-hmm. But either way, so that gave me experience of A, talking to a large audience and being comfortable with that, and B, writing content. So by the time I found Starseed, when I came back to Magic, and I always like telling Aaron Forsythe the story that, you know, I came back to Magic literally the day they previewed Skullclamp on Magic the Gathering. And he was like, I can't believe Skullclamp brought Mevin Irwin to Magic. And I'm like, well, what do you want me to say, man? I saw it and I was like, I haven't played this game in years. And this card is busted. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, what is happening? And so I was doing the work for Star Chamber, and at that point I went to Origins, and this was like Origins 2003, Origins, you know, 2004. And when I was there, I met Peter Atkinson. He was one of the original founders of Wizards of the Coast, and he was just like roaming the Origin, you know, booths or whatever. And I was looking at Magic stuff, and, you know, he kind of struck up a conversation, and then he was like, hey, do you want to play some Magic? And I was like, I don't have any Magic cards. And he was like, I've always got Magic cards. And like put out all five of the 8th edition starter decks. And I chose poorly. I chose the white one, that gained life. Yeah, I got completely creamed, but I got to play in a multiplayer battle with Peter Atkinson and my, you know, by Paul Denon there from Star Chamber was there and some other guys. And it was great because, of course, Peter Atkinson had all these stories about Wizards of the Coast and about Magic, and that just brought back all these awesome feelings of playing Magic. And Star Chamber at that point was starting to be sold off. It got sold to Sony Online Studios. And at this point, the game is dead as far as I know, and kind of died a slow, sad death as soon as it was kind of, you know, sold away to two different people or whatever. But Star Chamber was a great experience. And ultimately, you know, when, as I noted, I'm competitive. So when I got competitive into Magic, I wanted to know, you know, every website that published strategy stuff. And of course there was, it was before TCG Player. It was, Brainburst. It was Brainburst. And Brainburst had like a premium service. And then like SCG had a premium service that debuted somewhere around there, very close thereafter. But ultimately, you know, I was like, oh, cool. Like, I can write a strategy article about, you know, Magic. And I would basically, you know, sort of, I picked up from Star Chamber where I would write for those guys. And then I just kind of did it for Magic, you know, and I just assumed that it was, you know, I've already got a voice, so let's just use it. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of went and started from there. Now, the article, as I recall, is the Rebutton Carton Kin. where I'm trying to say that Ken Kroner is wrong about Mirrodin Draft, and I was, that whole article is kind of hilarious because I am not correct. And so, I mean, I actually got to hang out with Ken, you know, and we laughed about it later. You know, we hung out in Las Vegas once, and, yeah, we had a nice laugh over my 2004 article that kind of started my Magic writings. Hilarious.
Now, you started off just writing articles, and then eventually you moved into producing video content. Now, what brought that on?
Because no one was making videos. Mm-hmm. I saw YouTube, and I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is the future. Like, it's not anything else happening right now. This is the future. Why is there no Magic content? Oh my God. I couldn't believe it. And So the very first thing I did was a Battle Royale article. And that's where, you know, like I film myself playing Magic Online. I honestly have no idea if I'm the first person to ever video myself playing Magic Online, but I think I am. Anyway, so I did those videos and they were kind of neat in their own way. And at the time, I pitched to to Craig Stevenson, the editor of Star City at the time. I said, hey, you know, what if I, you know, just film myself playing Magic and I could, you know, that would be my article for the week or whatever. And he was like, you're crazy. He's like, no one's going to sit around and watch you play Magic. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, you're going to need a script. And I'm like, really? Do I have to have a script? He was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, if I got a script, well, I got to do something with it, you know? And so I'm going to do something with it. I started with, like, back then, I started with, like, a basic image program that I would just create single JPEGs, and I would cycle through them, you know, as I said my lame jokes. And, you know, it was a different way to communicate, but I knew it was powerful, and I knew it was the future, and I didn't understand why people didn't get it, but I didn't care. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ultimately, I certainly don't think I was the best at, by any means, when I got started. But I do think, you know, I kind of realized it first. And as a result, I got in years and years of practice before people were like, oh, yeah, maybe people like to watch video content on YouTube. And I'm like, duh. So, I mean, really, it's ridiculous.
But you did what I feel like anybody should do. And I always tell people this, you know, if you're going to get into blogging, if you're going to get into podcasting, bring something new to the table. You know, I can't tell you how many times people have approached me and said, hey, Aaron, I got this idea for a podcast. And I'm like, okay, lay it on me. And they're like, it's going to be me and my two friends, and we're going to drink and talk about Magic. It's going to be hot right there. And I'm like, well, there's Brainstorm Brewery. There's Heavy Meta. There's nothing new about that. Or, you know, somebody they'll be like, hey, Aaron, I want to write for this website. What do you think of this? And I'm like, all right, what do you got for me? And they're like, I'm going to do a game day tournament report. Never been done before, right there. And I'm like, and you know, I always look for that. You know, one of the shows that I'm a big fan of is Magic the Amateuring, if you're familiar. It is two ladies. It was two ladies and a guy. And the guy has since, you know, taken a break from the show. And their show started with the fact that they were all new to Magic. And they made this really fun show. They're all theater nerds. There's like an improv element to it. And they really break down basic concepts. And they were one of the few podcasts, you know, or few content providers, period, that aimed themselves solely at the new player and made it fun and made it digestible and walked you through all their experiences and did it in this very improv kind of whose line is it anyway kind of way. And that's exactly what I point to. Like they looked at what was going on in the scene and said, what's missing? Oh yeah, let's do this. You know, no one's done it like this before. Let's do this. And I feel like that's something anybody should do when they think about creating content. And I just don't see that enough.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough. I mean, because you like a lot of what artists do is they just steal everything, mm-hmm. you know, good artists borrow and great artists steal and all that stuff. And there's certainly, for me, and what is often called the I Love Lucy of web shows, is Zay Frank, who made what he called The Show. It was just Zay Frank's The Show. And he did a New Year's resolution for himself that he would make a video every weekday for a year. And that's exactly what he did. And those shows were amazing. They were, I mean, the editing was fast and choppy when no one was ever doing that. It was blogging in your face style. It was like silly jokes, and it was, you know, silly sort of skits and stuff he would do, and he would make every day different and interesting, and the way he would always sign off his program would be, this is Zay Frank thinking, so you don't have to, and, you know, as you may or may not know, I end all my shows with, this is Evan Irwin tapping the cards, so you don't have to, mm-hmm. So, you know, that was, I mean, that's a straight ape, you know what I mean, like, it's not anything that I really came up with. I just thought, hey, that's a great line. I want to use that line and sort of put a magic spin on it. So, you know, these days it's a little bit tougher. You know what I mean? Like, particularly in sort of the video world, you know, there's all these people doing unboxings, and there's people who are like, let's do the deck building stuff. And there's the EDH people. There's my show, which is sort of like, you know, news/enthusiasm. And there's also my history program and stuff that I've been doing. And there's other people doing history programs, which I think is terrific. Mm-hmm. And that's great, you know. So it is difficult to kind of sort of be yourself and make your own thing. But, you know, the easiest thing in the world to do is not make content. So I guarantee you, if you don't want to do it, it won't exist at all. I mean, you know, it takes time. It takes preparation. I mean, as you know, I mean, it's a thing that you kind of have to work at, and you kind of get into a rhythm. And there's that, you know, there's that, for me at least, you know, when I'm in the middle of making content, there's always that, there's sort of that buzz if you're like, I feel good about this, that we're in a rhythm. This is good. I like this. I like how that went. You know, like, I like how I said that. I like how that, you know, that came off and blah, blah, blah. And that stuff feels good. But in terms of like saying I'm trying to start from scratch, it's hard to say you have the most original idea at this point. You know, there's so much different types of content. And I love that. I think that's brilliant. But B, I think at this point, it's going to be a little bit about what can you do with what already exists? What spin can you put on it? Not so much you're going to create this thing that no one's ever heard of, but rather, you know, can you show me a new way of talking about constructive?
Yes.
Can you show me a new way of talking about draft or looking at sets or whatever it is? You know, like, and you have all these people, which is nice, because when I was doing it specifically back, you know, in the original days of the main show, I had no idea what I was doing. And I mean, you know, I would just throw spaghetti on the wall and I was just like, is that good? Is that good? No, that's a terrible idea. I mean, you know, you go back, you see some really terrible things that I was trying at the time. And I mean, you know, and part of the ways, you know, I'm proud because I was a trailblazer, you know, and the other half, I'm just like, just, you know, trying to crawl in myself and say, I can't, and I really, you know, and so that's fun. But you know, there was, we did the talent search, the MCG talent search at one point. And there was a guy who did video, and I was, you know, I loved it. I tried to encourage him as much as possible. And, you know, it didn't take long before, you know, he hit A, the sort of the technological hurdles, and B, the time hurdles. Mm-hmm. And in order to make a video program, it takes so much knowledge of the technical side and so much time to make it correct. And I mean, even after all these years, I mean, I've gotten really good at figuring out how long it's going to take me to do things. But there's not so much efficiency that you can just say, you know, I can crank out a 12-minute show in 5 hours. It's like, no, I can crank out a 12-minute show in about 12 hours, which is generally my rate, you know, in terms of like, it takes about an hour per minute. That's for writing, recording, and animating and putting it all together and all that good stuff. So I would love to find someone who can kind of carve their own niche and do something a little different. But I'm also just as intrigued by someone who can take what it is that we're doing or what it is that anyone else is doing and just do something unique with it. And that's, I love different. I love unique. I love things I've never seen before. You know, I get to do some of that in my job, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But, but yeah, you know, so the Maddie Show is the ability for me to obviously, you know, talk to people. I get to communicate in a very unique way. And I like how I've been able to kind of, you know, when I feel a certain way about something, I feel like I'm very good at emoting that and explaining that and showing people that. And that's a good thing. And that's what I've gotten good at. So if someone loves a certain thing, or if they love EDH, or if they love drafting, you know, like, A, start making content for it if that's what you want to do. And you'll find that if you're, you know, I make a lot of what I do is I just make the content I want to see, mm-hmm. you know, like no one's making the Magic Show, so I have to make the Magic Show, you know, like no one's talking about the spoilers in the way that I want them to talk about them. So I have to make that happen. So if someone is not talking about, you know, EDH or you know, Commander, you know, or draft or you know, who care, or multiplayer Magic or whatever it is, if they're not, you know, filling that niche for you, you can fill that niche. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to get too hoity about being the change you want to see in the world.
I was just thinking that.
I know, right? You can't help it. You know, Gandhi's smart man, but you know, like, but seriously, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like a lot of people just kind of yearn for this stuff. And it's like, you know, you can make it. It doesn't have to be perfect, because the more you do it, the better you get at it. I promise.
Yeah. Now, you brought up your enthusiasm and being a visible personality in a community and working for one of the more successful websites does open people up to some criticism. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I regularly hear about you, Evan, is people feel like you're actually too enthusiastic. Like, I do hear that. They think that you get too excited about things to the point where they feel like it might not be genuine, or like you might just be sort of playing it up for the cameras. What do you feel like when you hear that? Like, do you think, is that true? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Lord God, it's not true. in some ways, I wish I could tone down my own kind of my own feelings. But the other half is I know how good it is, you know, to kind of get that stuff out and try to explain to that stuff to people. It always kind of hurts in a way, because it hurts when someone calls you fake, and it hurts when someone says that you're being disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And and there have been so many times. Oh my God, there have been so many times where I write out the paragraph. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, no, this is really how I feel, and this is actually what I thought about time reversal at the time, or whatever it was, you know. And you know, I would rather show you the, like, you know, I want to expose the raw nerve, and I feel like the ability to kind of show you the raw emotion is more interesting and more, you know, more fulfilling than trying to just placate it or try to tone it down or whatever. And you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, and a lot of people, even people that I've worked with in the past, are like, you know, seriously, like, are you really like mad? I'm like, dude, I love magic. You don't understand. And if you do understand, you watch my show a lot, because, mm-hmm. you know, like there is no knob that I can turn down. There is no like, well, maybe I shouldn't be that excited about Sarkin. I'm like, no, Sarkin the Dragon Speaker is amazing. And I love that Wizards can continually impress me and make me, you know, excited to play Magic cards and see what these cards can do. And the little twist and little changes and all that stuff is great. And all I want to do is tell people about it. I want people to love this as much as I love this. And if they don't, I want them to understand how much I do. Mm-hmm. And it's always sort of, you know, painful when you can't really come back from that stuff. They can't, you know, someone's like, well, you're just saying this because you work for Star City, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, I've said this stuff before I was on their payroll. I said this stuff when I was just making videos. I mean, I'm better at it now, but that doesn't mean it stopped being true. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't feel it, I wouldn't do it. Like, this is where, I mean, you know, you kind of want to be where you, like, you kind of want to be in a certain spot in your life. You kind of want to say, like, this is what I meant to do. You know what I mean? Like, I can't go and work on World of Warcraft. I can't go and work on League of Legends with this enthusiasm, because it's not there, mm-hmm. because I don't love those games like I love Magic. I don't feel about those games like I feel about Magic. So, you know, like, I feel like the best thing I can do, rather than type out all these really defensive, you know, like, I'm really being me and all this other garbage, that all I can do is just continue to try to be steadfast in what, you know, I sort of show people and what I tell people, and, you know, that I've never lied about it. You know what I mean? That's the thing. And people are like, have you lied? You know, have you just, you know, have you embellished this, or have you said that? Like, no, every time, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I learned really quickly that it's always more interesting to just tell people one way or the other how you feel, yeah. because wishy-washy sucks. It's boring. Mm-hmm. No one wants to hear someone go, well, you know, I might be okay and constructed if there's a certain deck with such and such, and if the metagame does this. I mean, like, dude, do you think it's good or not? You know, like, just say it. Because if you're right, it's awesome. And if you're wrong, just laugh it off, because everyone's wrong about everything all the time. I mean, you know, like, yes, I'm remembered, you know, I have sort of some famous misses or whatever, but I would rather everyone get a kick out of it, and I would rather laugh about it, because it was like, man, you remember what we used to think about that card? Like, that's hilarious. You know, like, that, I enjoy that, and I think people should get a kick out of that. And that doesn't hurt my feelings when someone brings up, you know, Spectral Procession, or, you know, or Time Reversal, or whatever it is that I got, or War and Instigator, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It doesn't hurt my feelings. You're not going to make me feel bad. We're just going to laugh about it and high five, and we're going to move on. You know, I've signed all of those cards before at some point in time, and it's always a good time. You know, it's always like, man, can you believe how much I thought this was going to be worth, or how good I thought this was going to be, you know, or how bad I thought it was going to be in terms of Spectral Procession. That's up to me. It's pure. It's not, you know, there's no taint in that. There's no tainting in terms of, like, what it's supposed to be, or what it's, you know, what it should be because I'm in this position, or whatever it is. Come on.
Well, I have to say, I for one love your enthusiasm, and more importantly, I went back through your old Magic Show episodes last night when I was researching you, and you really bared your soul in those videos. You were happy, you were angry. There was a video I found from 2008 where you had lost a friend, and you cried. Oh, yes. You looked at that camera and you bald, and we were with you through all of that. And that's something that I think we just don't see anymore in a lot of content. And I remember just watching it and having such so much more respect for you, seeing you display all of these emotions and being raw like that. And I was like, this is not a bad thing. Like, this is something more people should be shooting for. And more importantly, I feel like, you know, kind of like you said, where you determine where you want to be in life and in the community. And I feel like I kind of want to be around more positive people, where, you know, I do feel like the community gets kind of jaded sometimes, and like people's default response to something is to shit on it. like I've gotten to the point where I won't even post decklist anymore. Like, I remember, for example, Jerry Thompson has this little column he started where he talks about like a different deck every day. And I remember there was one he posted that was a legacy deck, and it was Hypergenesis. And I've been playing Living End for the past year, so I have a great appreciation for graveyard decks and that kind of nonsense or whatever. And I remember tweeting the link, and I was like, I love this. Like, I would play this, sleeve it up. And I remember being really excited about it. And within like minutes, I had all these tweets going, it sucks, you sucks, what are you thinking, this is lame, it's never going to work, what are you doing? And I couldn't believe that. And I was like, why can't you just let me be happy, you know? And I could see if I had asked for feedback. Like, I could see if I had said, hey, folks, what do you think about this? Let me have it. I'm all for honesty. But, you know, I just don't understand how we've gotten to the point where people's default response to I like this is to not like it. Like, why can't you just let someone enjoy something? So if it comes down to that type of person or you loving everything, I would rather have you. Cause that's just where I want to be right now. Like, I want people to just, we could just love it all. Like, I love this deck and I love that deck and that's cool. You should love that deck. And, I think that's the more preferable, you know, person to be around.
Yeah, I mean, basically there's nothing wrong with liking things. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong to be excited about things. There's nothing wrong to have preferences. Excuse me. There's nothing wrong with getting excited about, I mean, anything. I mean, there's nothing wrong with encouragement. Encouragement is always a fine thing. And, you know, like every once in a while, I'll get a wild hair and I'll start deck building. There was a point in time where I built a mono black, you know, modern deck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's all these people. I mean, there are people who will throw the hate and they'll just be like, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? This is crap. Why do you even bother? You know, and it's like at some point, you know, and for me, like I've learned a long time ago, you just have to just fight through it and just, you know, ignore the haters. Haters going to hate, yada, yada. And they're going to call you names and they're going to think whatever. And a lot of people are just like Evans in Wizard's back pocket or whatever ridiculous crap they're on. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the more that you're known, the easier it is for people to sort of say really terrible things about you, which is weird. But, you know, it always changes. You know, ultimately, I like to throw stuff out. Over time, I'll be honest, it kind of changes you a little bit. And just like you said, you know what I mean? Like, you don't really want it to affect you that much. You know, you don't want to say, I stopped doing this because I got such negativity out of it. But it really does affect you after a while. And sometimes you don't even know it. You know, sometimes you don't even realize it. You're just like, oh, I haven't talked about, you know, blah, 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 or I haven't said anything about, you know, my favorite deck or my favorite player or whatever in a long time. And it's like, why don't I want to do that? Well, because the last time I did that, you know, big, huge negative feelings. And that stuff kind of, you know, it builds up over time. It's not an instant problem, but over time you start kind of second guess yourself and just stopping doing things you would do. You know, I write a lot of responses on Twitter that I just delete and stop doing. happens a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Where I'll start replying to somebody and I'll type the whole thing out, you know what I mean? And then I'll read it and I'll go like, huh. I'm like, that's going to be misconstrued. That's going to be held against me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then I go, nope, just going to delete it. Not going to worry about it. And, you know, I'll talk to this person later about it maybe, you know? And it's such that kind of thing is there. I mean, in some ways it's good. It kind of keeps you, you know, on your toes and, you know, you have to be kind of self-aware and all. But the other half is that, you know, it just kind of mutes you a little bit. There was, you know, the guy that you saw, you know, who talked about, you know, I talked about Richie Prophet dying and it was a lot, you know, I was a lot more kind of raw, as it were, back then. And, you know, like part of that is maturity, you know, in some ways, like, you know, that like just pure anger and raw hate or whatever it is, isn't always the most effective. And the other half is you do kind of get a little guarded after a while, you know, you do kind of say, I'm not comfortable being that open with the stuff, you know, based on where I am and the position I have and all this other stuff. And in some ways that's good. In some ways that's bad. You know, the more that I've kind of had a public presence, the more that I've really valued my private life, mm-hmm. you know? And, I mean, on my blog, I used to blog, you know, about my family all the time and my true thoughts about like politics and religion and all this other stuff. And, you know, ultimately, you know, over time, just again, bit by bit, you know, it became A, less important to me, and B, more important to me that, you know, I don't say these certain things that people may read because I don't want them to think certain ways about me. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's part of being self-aware. Other people can be like, well, that's, you know, you're just self-censoring yourself. And I'm like, man, people self-censor every day.
Yeah.
I mean, on all sorts of random things. So, you know, so for me, it's, you know, a public presence has kind of changed me, but, I don't think it's all in a bad way, but I do recognize that I was certainly a lot more, open before I became more well-known, I guess, as it were.
One of the ways that I deal with negativity, like you said, you know, you type out the tweet and then you delete it all of a sudden. My friend Adrian came up with the phrase, you need to be Beyonce in the elevator. And what that means is if somebody's like coming for me or there's just negativity on Twitter, I'm just going to stand here and smooth out my dress. I'm going to let Solange swing. I'm going to let her and Jay-Z go at it. And I'm just going to be a lady and stand in the corner and smooth out my dress. So if you ever see me on Twitter saying today's a Beyonce in the elevator day, that means mm-hmm. I'm just going to be a lady and let you all duke it out. Let you all be nasty. And I'm just going to be glamorous in the elevator. And sometimes that's what you have to do. You know, you can't respond to the tweets or you can't give into it. So just smooth out your dress. You know, just whatever. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and obviously there's a lot of factors in that, you know, depending on like my position at SCG, there's certain things I don't even want to talk about because I don't want that to come back negatively on the company. And the other stuff is that I don't want to like dogpile. I mean, there's, you know, I've tried to say as literally as nicely as I can about Magic Online. You know what I mean? Like when it comes up, I try to go like, it's really sad how people have to defend it so much. It's just, I feel bad, mm-hmm. you know? I know the guys who are working on it, so I feel bad for them. And I don't want to just say, like, this is crap. This is terrible. I never want to play this crap again. How dare you? And, like, this is a joke. I can't believe that. You know, I mean, like, all that garbage. Like, it's just, it's so crazy negative. You're not going to change things.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and way back in the early Magic shows, it was like, if I just rage hard enough, you know what I mean? If I can just scream and yell and be angry enough, I will get the change that I want, or I will influence the people I want to influence. And, you know, people still haven't learned that lesson. And, I mean, I did, but a lot of people haven't. And they think that if they're just angry enough, or if they just scream enough or call people names enough, that that's going to get the change that they want. And it's not.
Yeah. So regarding your work at SDG, forgive me for asking this, but what exactly do you do? And what I mean by that is people sort of assume that you do everything where, you know, the event didn't go well, tell Evan Irwin, or I don't like the art on the tokens, tell Evan Irwin. Like, I feel like you've become the go-to guy for everything related to Star City. So what exactly is like your area of expertise? Like, what do you do?
Sure. And I've gotten this question a lot. This is not the first time people ask this question. You know, what would you say you do here? well, at this point, you know, to give you a little bit of context, when I was hired in 2010, it was me and a graphic designer, you know, and that was it.
Wow.
That was kind of, I mean, we had a copy editor, and I think that was it. So it was me, graphic designer, copy editor. And today I manage something like 2 or 3 dozen people, almost. And, you know, I have like, you know, sub departments around me. I have, you know, entire crews of people and stuff. So to kind of give you an overview here, there's me and I have an assistant. Her name's Carrie. She's wonderful. And, she helps me get stuff done. And, I'm over the graphic design, I have an assistant manager, and I have 2 graphic designers, and then I have 2 different artists, and those are Andrea Radek and Kristen Plesko. And, so I've got Ray, my assistant manager. I've got, Italy and Julie Jules, and they're amazing. And I also have the video production department. So all of the SCG Live guys, one of the first things that and we can talk about this if you'd like, but I'll just kind of to gloss it over a little bit. When we first started SCG Live, we originally contracted out that video work, and then we took it in-house. Mm-hmm. And that started with one director became two directors became four directors. And now I have four directors who go on the road, an in-house director who just works on internal projects, and I have a coordinator who manages all those five guys. I've got my copy editor for the site itself is Danny West. And of course, we have our content coordinator, which is Cedric Phillips. So I manage him, and I have a weekly conference call where me and Cedric talk about all the issues of the day. I have my copywriters. That's John Del Beatty. Of course, we also have Nick Miller and Andrew Shrout, who are my coverage coordinators. And they do some work internally when they're actually in the office, but they're normally not because they're working so many shows. I over all of the in-store programs. That includes all the IQs, all the like the premier IQs, states, regionals, all that stuff. I work with my assistant manager, Jason, and he's over a team of five right now. And ultimately, you know, we determine sort of what in-store programs is going to be. All of the promotional items and things, I develop all that stuff for Grand Prix, you know what I mean? Like I work with Pete, the president, of course, Ben Blyweiss, and Jared Silva, the manager of Organized Play.
Did you say Jared Silva?
Yeah.
Love Jared Silva.
Yeah, he's the man.
He's beautiful.
He's a good-looking man. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to tell you he's not. I mean, you know, it's just like Kibler. You can't call the man ugly. I mean, come on.
Did I tell you the first time I ever met Jared Silva?
You did not.
Okay. So I was at GP Richmond, which was amazing, mm-hmm. which you guys, mm-hmm. you know, took the helm of and everything. And I had a minor issue with one of the judges at the cell phone charging area. And mm-hmm. there was some issues with him wanting my ID, and my ID didn't have my gender on it. And there was all this weirdness. And I remember going to Jared Silva, and he seems to be a very tactile person. So like, mm-hmm. you know, he's standing next to me and he's touching my arm. So like he touches my shoulder. Aaron, I'm really sorry to hear you such a bad experience. Touches my forearm. We're going to do everything we can about this. And I'm like, just don't stop touching me. And by the time he was done, I was just this puddle. And then by the end of the day, the judge in question had apologized. I'm like, very sorry. I didn't mean to be that strict with you. And then I was leaving, and Jared was at the registration table, and he comes down and again touches the shoulder. Did everything go okay for you, Aaron? I'm like, yes. And beautiful man. So I don't know. I was just like, whatever you do, just don't stop touching me. Just oof.
Nice. Yeah, he's a fine looking dude. He's super hardworking. Like, there's just no one better at running events than Jared.
Absolutely.
The guy is amazing. He's an actual robot. And he can go for, hours and hours and hours. The guy is just the best at what he does. And that's, you know, but anyway, to kind of sort of wrap up what it is I do here, all the newsletter stuff, all of the artwork stuff. I art direct all of the playmats for in-store programs, IQs, open trials. I art direct all the tokens.
So you're in charge of the squirrels?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So, I got to work with Liz Nugent on those. When Derek Sheets won the Invitational, and Derek is like, I want to be a swan token. And I'm just like, I got it. I'm like, he's going to be falling from the sky, and he's going to grab onto a swan and hold on for dear life. And he's going to have that big Derek Sheets smile. It's going to be great. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. for Tom Ross and like that. I love art directing. It's the best thing ever. Where I just get to just create scenes in my head, and then the artists make them, and it's amazing. All that stuff, and planning promotions for Grand Prix, which takes up a lot of my time, and you know, coordinating stuff, social media stuff, all our news items, working out certain business arrangements and things. Which, for example, like John Avon getting his lithographs on StarCityGames.com. I interface with a lot of that stuff. And, playing an SCG Live, obviously, what we're going to do with our coverage, what we're going to do with our video stuff internally, the Versus series and all that. I mean, it's more or less if you see it and you hear it from SCG, I've probably had a finger in that pie. There's almost no chance that you see something that we put out that I didn't at least take a look at and put in feedback if I had any on it.
So it sounds like people are right to come to you with a little of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is the role that I play. Like, I am the face of the company. I get that. I know that. I act in that sort of way. You know what I mean? Like, as I was saying earlier, I'm self-aware in that regard, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't want to do anything that I would, that would hurt that or hurt the company. Obviously, I mean, the company has grown incredibly. Pete Hopeland, the president, has been incredibly kind to me and my family. And, you know, like that's something I treasure. I'm not going to screw that up. So I keep that in mind. And if people have issues or questions or whatever, you know, I'm here. I do what I can.
What stands out to you the most about your time at SCG? Because like you said, when you first started out, there weren't very many of you. And now it's become sort of this juggernaut in the scene. You know, like when you look back on that, you know, what goes through your mind? Like, wow.
There's just so much. I mean, like, basically for the first couple of years, I mean, just literally hanging onto a rocket. You know, it's like everything was gangbusters. Everything was great. Everything was working. We were hiring infinite people. I mean, you know, I wasn't a manager to start with. I was just, what was my title? Technology and new media specialist or something. I don't know. It was weird. But either way, I was like the social media guy. I was the marketing guy. And over time, you know, like there needed to be these kind of leadership structures in place so that we can make all this stuff happen. I love the in-store program stuff. I mean, all that stuff is really awesome. Running these Grand Prix that are huge, I mean, you know, are just fantastic. I love that stuff. You know, I'm hoping that Jersey can beat the record. We're trying to get there. You know, I feel like we juiced that tournament literally as hard as we could juice it. And, you know, it's great to be in those meetings and be like, you know what's going to drive people nuts? Sleeves and deck boxes. You know, it's like, it's never been done. That's another one of the things. You know, I love doing things that no one's ever done. So let's do it. So like all that stuff, like the invitational qualifier playmats and the open trial playmats, you know, if you look at some of those illustrations, my goal in all that stuff is that you've never seen that before. You know, there's like an elf family with a dragon that's kind of hanging around them because I've never really seen a family dragon, that type of stuff. You know, we had a great series that did the Greco-Roman stuff, which I thought was cool. And so in-store programs is amazing. I love working with SCG Live. Obviously, I'm super proud with how that's came about. And the team for SCG Live is absolutely amazing. Connor, Daniel, Choi, and Shoebox and Jesse. Those guys are amazing. And they work super, super hard. And Jeremy Knoll, who manages those guys, they all work super hard at making the best broadcast possible. And you know, nothing warms the heart more when people, you know, kind of explain that, you know, SCG Live is doing it as well as it can be done because I'm competitive and I want to win.
With that said, though, you know, SCG has clearly set the standard in terms of coverage, events, producing content and things like that. What's left? Like, where do you go from here? What else are you looking to improve upon?
Oh, I've got plans. I can't really talk about them. You know, I mean, obviously for some things, you know, like for Grand Prix or whatever, it's like, you know, you want to make the biggest, best events. You want to build in things that take away like the large negativities. You know, there's not a lot of tournament organizers that have the resources that SCG does. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, other organizers can kind of pull in people and kind of work with other people at certain times, but rarely do they have all the people in one building. So, you know, when you have graphic designers who can make beautiful websites and you have a web development team that can work on technology if you need it, you know, and you have literally just the best organized play people that exist, you know, you have that incredible kind of machine that works together. So when we had problems, like the number one problem from Richmond, as you may recall, is the insane check-in line. Yeah. And, you know, and when that happened, you know, like we had to solve it. It wasn't like, well, we'll deal with it in a different way, or, you know, we'll just, you know, we'll do the best we can, or we'll have more people. I'm like, no, we need to completely change the paradigm of how pre-registration works, because this is not sustainable for 4,000 people. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. And so we created, you know, a system that made that work. And I love doing those types of things, finding issues and ideally finding the best solution for it, and then kind of watching that solution work and solving those problems for people. So, you know, it's been amazing. I don't know. You know, I love working with artists. You know, probably working with the artists is the best thing. You know, Liz Nugent and the Creature Collection, Kristen Plesko, who does all of our invitation qualifier artwork and open trials, and now Andrea Radek, who's taking over the Creature Collection stuff, and you'll be able to see her work starting next year. And she's done a great job, and I think you're going to love that stuff too.
Yeah. So enough about magic. Let's talk about you outside of the game. So loving husband, devoted father, hashtag Irwinning. You're known for your lots of babies, which we love.
Yep.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So how'd you meet your wife?
Through a mutual friend.
Okay.
And we kind of hit it off immediately. And I just, you know, just kind of went head over heels for that girl. And, you know, couldn't help myself. And But yeah, so it worked out, and you know, she felt the same way. High five. And you know, there's been two babies as a result. I also have a stepson, Bryce, who's 9 years old. He's great. And yeah, so at this point, you know, we have Miles. He's the youngest. He is 3. And then we have Maddie, Madeline. She is 4. And my two older girls from my previous marriage, there's Abigail. She's 10. And then Annie, she's 12. Mm-hmm. So I almost have a teenager.
Oh, man. So, what is that like?
Terrifying. Let's face it. Mainly, you know, I know how bad I was, you know, and I know how bad they can be, you know, and you just kind of, honest to God, you just kind of brace, you know, you just brace yourself and hope that they aren't too terrible. I mean, you know, yeah. What can you say? Like, you know, they're going to be teenagers. There's going to be hormones, and there's going to be emotions, and there's going to be drama. And, you know, I expect these things. None of this will surprise me. So I like to come into things eyes open, you know, and I think that's great. But, you know, my wife, Ashley, she's absolutely amazing. And she's been super supportive. I mean, you know, even back when I was still traveling, we first got together, I was still going to all the pro tours. And, you know, I remember very clearly one of the first times I met her was when I was on my way to Pro Tour Honolulu. And, you know, it just kind of sort of set the stage of, you know, hi, bye. And then I was just, you know, then I was off on an airplane, and that continued for about another year or so. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, my family is amazing. And it's, they put up with me. I don't know. It's one of those things. Family, right?
Yeah. Right. So 5 kids, are there plans for any more?
No.
Okay. So we're done. No.
Oh my God. We had to be done. I can't take any more children. I do. I mean, I like my kids, and I don't dislike a big family, you know, and I've always wanted a lot of kids or whatever. Mainly, you know, so because, you know, ultimately I want to be a better dad, you know, than what I had and that type of thing. And, but yeah, I mean, like, no more. 5 is fine. 5 is enough. 5 is a lot. Just went to Florida with all 5 of them. And that was getting all those kids with all those age ranges on an airplane was insane.
I would imagine, unless it hurt in the pocketbook too, you know?
Yeah, you know, luckily there was a deal or whatever. There's a straight shot from like Roanoke to Orlando for a low price, because a Legionnaire just does this trip twice a week or whatever. Anyway, I found a deal. It wasn't that bad. But yeah, everything expounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I wish, you know, like dinner is always a thing. You know, when you have kids, there's no like, I'll skip dinner, or I'll just find something, or I'll eat later. No, this is happening every day. You're going to make it happen every morning. They eat cereal, you know, every day, every dinner, you know, you got to make it happen. So yeah, I see some of my, you know, like whenever I go hang out with like the typical Magic players or my single friends or whatever, you know, there's a lot of stark contrast to the dad in me that is always there. You know, I'm like, what do you mean you're not going to eat dinner? You know, that's weird.
Do you find that you look at Magic differently as a father, like, you know, with regards to, you know, making sure that events are family friendly or making sure that events are welcoming to women? Because, you know, you have some girls, and maybe your girls are going to want to play when they get older. Like, do you think about it like that?
A little bit. I mean, you know, sometimes basically it's not something you got to think about a lot, because, you know, thankfully Wizards is very adamant about, you know, A, family friendly environments and whatnot, and B, no damsels in distress, and no, you know, the female fan service and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very good about that. So the real concern kind of comes from, you know, the guys with the anime play mats and mm-hmm. the boobs and the butts everywhere and all that stuff. And it's like, really, dude, is that necessary? Is that really what you need in your life right now? just, you know, that's the type of stuff that, you know, you don't really want to explain, you know, because it's not so much that they can't take it. It's the fact that you have to explain it,
yeah.
You know, it's like, Dad, why does she like, you know, girls dress like that? I'm like, oh God. Oh my God. I mean, you know, where do you even begin? I mean, that's one of the cool parts of parenting, is that you really get to define things for kids. And that's always something I love. You know, you get to define what, you know, honesty is and courage is and this other stuff. And then you get the really terrible questions, like, why do they like the anime thing?
I I can't remember who I was dealing with, but I seem to recall having a judge on the show, and they didn't mean this in any sort of condescending way, but they were like, you know, I think we were talking about how you deal with conflict as a judge, and how, you know, sometimes people will freak out like, oh my God, I'm late for this event, or why isn't this firing? And they were like, you know, a lot of the times you talk them down as if you were talking down, you know, a child or a temper tantrum, and you sort of use those same tools to deal with them, and it is remarkably the same. And I could see that, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, those are types of things. Those are sort of skills that you learn, mm-hmm. as it were. And you know, I wouldn't want people to think that you're kind of, you know, condescending to them. I think what you would say is, you know, you're trying to understand why they're upset. You're trying to get them to you're trying to get them to use their words. you know, like it's like, what is wrong specifically? Tell me how we can fix it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it sucks to kind of put it that way, I think, for those who are on the receiving end, but it's true. I mean, you know, the things that you learn dealing with the youngest of us can still help you dealing with the, you know, the just the 20-somethings, I guess.
So I fielded a couple questions from Twitter, which you are gracious enough to answer. So we're going to go ahead and rip into those. So at Manaburn MTG wants to know, are you grooming a replacement for the Magic Show? I love your content, but I need my fix more than bi-monthly.
No. I've tried over the years to get other writers in, and I just rewrite their stuff. or I just don't like it. I mean, you know, it's weird. I mean, I was I'm a pretty headstrong kind of dude, and pretty well like the things that I like and don't like the things I don't like, and I'm really picky when it comes to that type of stuff. And you know, I've never found a collaborator, certainly in that regard, that's worked very well. I don't expect, you know, to be able to hand it off. Now, for what it's worth, that was kind of the goal. You know, the idea was that, you know, the Magic Show was going to be sort of like the Daily Show, and it was going to be the Daily Show with, you know, with Jon Stewart, instead of the Magic Show with Evan Erwin. And at some point, you know, maybe I can hand off the reins. But and this was back, you know, back in the, you know, YouTube days when like it was just the Wild West, and there were no commercials on YouTube. There was no YouTube ad partner program thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no big, you know, push for you to have this brand. I mean, for God's sakes, I have like the worst username of all time on YouTube. For God's, Mr. Orange Guy. It's not even spelled the right way. Like I spell my Twitter. I mean,
well, I didn't want to say it, but yeah.
You don't have to say it. I know, but they marry you to that. You can't change it. That's like literally the number one rule of YouTube is you can't change your username. I would pay them real cash dollars to get snap anything but what I have. But, you know, I'm grown to almost 60,000 subscribers regardless, and that makes me feel good. And I know it ain't because of my username is easy to figure out. but yeah, I mean, I would love for other video content to happen, but here's exactly what happens. And this has happened multiple times over the years. Somebody will say, I'm going to make a video article, and then I'll get a tweet and they'll go, oh my God, I can't believe it's this much work. And I go, uh-huh. And then they go, I had no idea how hard you work on these. I have so much respect for you. I mean, you know, and I feel, it makes me feel good, I guess. But the other half is like, you know, damn, I know they're not going to go the extra mile because if they're already hitting those roadblocks and they're not able to push through it, they're never going to be a real video producer. Mm-hmm. You know, like making videos is hard and it's long and it's tedious. But you know, there is no greater feeling than when I release content. It is the actual best. It's this cloud nine feeling where I get to, you know, like you tinker away in the curtained off area, and you work at it and you work at it and you work at it, and you go, okay, here, like take it and get it, just go, just let it flow, and let's do this, and tell me how you feel about it. That wave of feedback, and it's often very, very positive, you know, is just the greatest feeling in the world. And as much as I would love to be able to hand off something, I don't think it's a reality. You know, I think I'm me. I'm able to make my content. Sure, I made it in a way that we could have a different host, but the way that YouTube works, it probably never will, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, yeah, I would love to make content more than twice a month. I really would. But, you know, like, again, I got my family, and I got my full-time job, and there's only so many, like, late nights I can spend, you know, just hacking away at that stuff. Mm-hmm.
With that said, at Anzi Malakar wants to know, what tips do you have for creating better content, something that really stands out?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to keep doing. That way, you don't have to be this person who creates, you know, something brand new and unheard of every single time. I mean, there are people in the Magic community. There are people in the Magic community that they will come out and they will just like kick your butt with amazing content, and then they will disappear for like years. There's Jeff Cunninghams in the world. there's the John Rizzos, and they will just randomly come out and just like drop the most amazing 3,000 words on you and then just disappear. And that's just what they do. And it's, you know, that's amazing, but that's not like, that's just not everybody. And you can't take these kind of outliers and apply them. You know, like a lot of the writers that you see today, I mean, they've been writing forever. And, you know, and it's not something that comes easy. And there's writer's block, and there's the concern of how people take it. And then they're like, you know, if you write a bad article and everybody jumps on your butt, and, or at worst, no one says anything. That's just honestly kind of way worse.
Indifference is worse than hate.
It really is. You know, you're just like, just tell me if you don't like it so I can know what to fix, but don't just not say anything. You know, but yeah, you know, the more that you do it, the more that you understand, you know, sort of the nuance of what it is that you're doing. You know, like, I mean, when I look back at the Magic Show, I mean, it took me like 40 or 50 episodes to even like think I had done anything. I mean, you know, even think that I had really made a leap forward or really gotten somewhere. And that watermark, by the way, was the Pro Tour Valencia show, which pioneered like just a ton of effects and sequences and stuff that I did for years and years after. And that was the first show where I was like, oh man, like all these crazy ideas I had at the time, in Spain, like they all worked out. It's amazing. You know, but it took me like what, a year, year and a half or whatever it was of doing that stuff before we can actually, you know, get to the point where you're like, oh man, this might actually be okay. You know? So there's that kind of languishing period, and a lot of people just can't handle it. They don't want to put in the work. That's A. You know, everyone wants to know, like, if there was just some secret, you know, if there was just something I could write about that was new and crazy and interesting, you know, I would be the best writer and everyone would care about me. You know, like it's not a sprint, you know what I mean? And it's week in, it's week out, and it's tough. And, you know, at least particularly, you know, when the Magic Show first started, and you can go back, I mean, I was making a video every week. I mean, I would put, God, I mean, the shows back then took longer to make. I mean, I would put 14 to 16 hours in those things and, you know, just week after week, just chugging along. And those little bits of encouragement were always super important to me. There was a point, I think it was around episode 3 or 4, where Randy Bueller said something like, hey man, like, you know, I really like your content. This is really cool. You know, like keep it up or something like that. And that just like totally meant the world to me, you know? And so if you see someone, you know, who A is trying something new, so high five to them, or B is, you know, just sort of starting out, but you can kind of see, you know, for me, my intuition is generally pretty good. When I see people, when I meet people, or when I see their content, you know, and, you know, generally I can sort of see the gem in there or the person that I know is coming out, you know, and I have, you know, like when I met Reed Duke, I was like, oh my God, this guy is going to be a superstar. Like no one knows this kid quite yet. Like he's had a little bit of success and people are kind of talking. I'm like, this guy's going to be huge. And like, I met Conley Woods in the airport in Hawaii when I was leaving that pro tour right after I met my wife. And you know, I met Conley and I talked to him for 5 minutes and I'm like, this guy is amazing. And I'm like, this guy is going to be huge. Everyone's going to want to know his name. Everyone's going to read his stuff. Like no one is thinking and talking the way that this guy is. And that doesn't mean that he immediately started out writing great articles or, you know, writing make great content. But, you know, you could, but I like to see sort of that sort of hint in people where I say, you know, I like what you're doing. You need to keep up what you're doing and not stop. And when you see that in other people, by all means, encourage them all to pieces, because encouragement is never negative. It's just never, ever. And people will only get better at what it is that they're doing if they continue to do it. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I mean, like there's no secret. There's no magical thing for creating better content. The way you create better content is to create content. The more you create it, the better it will get. I promise.
Yeah. And the last question I have for you is from at Ciara Nihil wants to know, where is the Pi Bet video?
Oh, it's coming. The Pybits are so tough. Honestly, mainly just, well, A, Brad complains that pies are too expensive, which I find hilarious. B, honestly, it's like, it's one of those things, it's like, you know what I don't want to do today? You know, like, not get pie in the face. And, you know, Brad's like, I got to get back and go test. You know what I mean? Like, all this other stuff. And you're like, but Brad, we got to hit each other with things in the face and make people laugh. So yeah, they're certainly coming. And it's, again, it's always so tough to just be like, you know, what I'm going to do after work today, I'm going to get pie in my ear, you know, like, just, that's what happened last time. Literal pie in my ear. It was gross. but yeah, that's the thing that can happen. Also, pies are expensive.
I'm going to have to remember that because I'm actually reading his book right now, the Grindr book, and I'm ready to have him on the show. So I'm reading the book and taking notes. And that's something I'm going to have to ask is, Brad, how do you feel about the cost of pie in today's economy? Like, I'll have to hit him with the hard questions, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and to give a little bit about Brad, like, Brad is just the coolest dude. Brad is, I mean, as people, you know, they also think, you know, like, Brad is disingenuous in some ways, and that's never true. You know, like, the best part about the set reviews for me is that you're literally hanging out with me and Brad for 6 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, it's what you're doing. We're not, like, you know, yes, we know we're on camera and we want to, you know, inform people and, you know, we're on or whatever as it is. But again, there's no sort of facade there. Brad is just as cool and as likable and as well-meaning, you know, when he's off camera as when he's on camera. He works super hard. The guy practices and tests constantly. And I think that, you know, my God, he's top eight in like the last, what, 5 or 6 GPs that have been standard that he's been in. So he gets the success there. And yeah, so I got nothing but good things to say about Brad. Brad was also a huge supporter of the Manic Show way back in the day. I met Brad for the first time again in that trip to Hawaii in Honolulu, which was turns out to be a pretty seminal moment in the Manic Show. But anyway, I met him and his brother there, and they did an intro to the Manic Show that was used, I think, either in those shows or shortly thereafter. And you know, and he would, you know, Brad came up to me and he was just like, dude, he's like, you know, every day, every Wednesday or whatever it was, I was published back then, every Wednesday at midnight, man, we're just refreshing. You know, and I'm just, you know, it's like super crazy fire. And it was great, you know, to meet someone who loved my work that much. And now I get to work with him, you know, on a regular basis. And that's a privilege. Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, Evan, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
Sure. Well, the worst username of all time on YouTube is Mr. Orange Guy. God, it kills me to just say it, which is spelled, God help me, M-R, Orange Guy, all together. Yes, just search for the Magic Show because I'm embarrassed explaining it to you. You can find me regularly on Twitter. I love Twitter. Twitter is absolutely amazing. I love the fact that the Magic community is basically on Twitter. Everyone, you know, huge community members are on Twitter constantly. It is the world's chat room. It's where you can talk to BDM and Aaron Forsyth and Mark Rosewater and me at Mr. Orange. And that's Mr. spelled out and Orange at Mr. Orange. You know, and you can really, you know, make your voice heard and just be a part of the conversation and just, you know, just talk to people. That's the coolest thing, is that it's a chat room that you can interact with whenever you feel like it and disconnect from whenever you feel like it. And there's no hard feelings and there's no problems with that. Mm-hmm. And it's great for me in terms of being able to, you know, like I'm in charge of marketing at SCG and kind of keep my finger on the pulse and all the other stuff. But the other half is just, you know, I kind of just get to hang out with all my Magic friends all the time, mm-hmm. you know, like it's great to be able to, you know, like, good morning, Twitter. Like, you know, here's this random thing about music because I love music. You know, and I get to watch you talk about your work and, you know, people getting on your nerves and stuff. And that's neat. I think that's great. I think that's a way to connect with people. And for the Magic community, like, we're all there. And that's so cool. It's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Evan. This has been such a thrill for me. Like I said, I've been a big fan of yours for a while, and you lived up to all of my expectations, and I'm really glad that we got to do this, and I look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You are not going to New Jersey, is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any vacation time, like, at all, and I was contemplating flying out there, but I would have to leave, like, on Sunday, like, midday Sunday, so I wouldn't even be able to do anything Sunday. I don't really play any Legacy, like, I don't know the meta at all. I don't have a deck or anything. If it was a format I was maybe more comfortable with, like, if it was a standard GP or a modern GP, I might be content to kind of wing it, but, you know, to pay all of that money, it's a much more of a crapshoot because it's Legacy, so...
I agree. Yep. And that's okay.
But I am.
Because we couldn't, you know, hang out and say hi and all that.
I know. My friends really tried everything. They were like, we're all going to be there. And I was like, no, you guys, I can't. Jared Silva's going to be there. No, you guys, I can't. No, this is going to happen. I'm like, I really can. So, but I know next year, I actually, because I've been with my company going on 5 years, I get an extra week of vacation time, which is certainly going towards magic events.
Absolutely.
So I understand that Charlotte is a big one for you guys next year. Going to Charlotte.
You're going to be in Charlotte? Absolutely. Sweet. We got 3 Grand Prix next year. We have Miami, Charlotte, and then Atlanta. So I'm in the planning stages right now for Miami. I, of course, have big ideas coming up, and they're wild and crazy. And that's my favorite thing in the world to do, is that I just, you know, and there's a non-zero amount of times in which I've called in Pete, the president, and just been like, all right, so I got this crazy idea, you know? And sometimes it works. Sometimes it works. I mean, like the Versus series, you know, like, you know, where you watch Brian Braun doing those guys, like that was literally like a random lark for me. I was like, you know what? We don't show the Magic community. We don't show playtesting. Like, why don't we show playtesting? Like, hey, Brad, hey, Jerry, you guys want to play on camera and we'll film it and see what people think about it. And then it's its own friggin' brand. You know what I mean? So that's the stuff that I absolutely adore. And like to watch my crazy ideas come to fruition. And I get to do that almost every day at SCG.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And if anybody has enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review or some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can keep up with me on Twitter at Original Estrus. And you can also email the show at the Deck Tees at gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.